Nimenhall, and welcome back to another episode of Ignite Your Power, the Kathy Mao podcast. Today, I'm joined by a truly inspiring guest, Michelle Niemeyer. Michelle spent years building a demanding legal career, but behind the success, she was struggling with deep burnout and a lifestyle that was slowly breaking her down. It wasn't until she received a rare autoimmune disease diagnosis that she was forced to stop, reflect, and completely transform her life. What came out of that journey is what Michelle calls the art of bending time, a holistic and systematic approach to life that goes far beyond the idea of work-life balance. Instead, Michelle teaches us how to reclaim our energy, create synergy between all aspects of life, and even gain back 10 hours of productive time each week, which we will dive in deeper. I'm so excited to talk about. So yeah, doing all of that without having to quit our jobs as well. So in this episode, Michelle will share her story of turning pain into purpose, the powerful mindset shifts she learned from leaders like Brendan Burchard, Dean Graziosi, and Tony Robbins, which I know for sure, and practical tools you can use today to reduce stress, rediscover joy, and design a life you truly love. So hi, Michelle. Thanks for being here.
How are you?
Good. Just been busy. So this is like a perfect topic and perfect divine timing that we're going to have the art of bending and truly having to make time for our busy schedules. But let's start with your journey, your story. I love listening to people's story and yours especially. We talked about it last time when we met up, but I know you were an attorney, but then now you're coaching. And so how did that journey begin?
Yeah. So, and I'm going to keep it short so we can give people the meat of what I can share with them that's meaningful to them. But how I got into this is that I was the stereotypical great, A student, followed all the rules, did the right things, took the classes that they said I should take, dropped the classes they said I needed to drop to fit in the ones for the college prep and all that, right? And I didn't know until later that literally that process sort of like took away parts of me that really mattered. Like I loved art and then I couldn't take art classes anymore. And I loved music and I stopped taking my music classes and, things like that so that I could fit in the foreign language and the advanced math and the stuff that gets you into the quote unquote better colleges and all that. So ultimately I went to law school and I got out. I worked as a lawyer in a large firm where I traveled a lot. And actually that first law job, I loved it. I had so much fun and I was working crazy hours. I was traveling all over the country. I was gone about 3 weeks out of the month. And I really took advantage of that. I visited sorority sisters where I, who lived in the cities I went to. And one time I stayed gone for 6 weeks and like traveled all over the Northwest and, my client paid for me to do that because it was cheaper than coming home. But, there was also a price to pay for that, which was that I had no life in DC. Like I had moved to DC. Other than the guy that I knew from law school who I was dating when I moved there and broke up with, I didn't know people in DC other than the people I worked with. And so, there was a while there where that was kind of rough. And then I met my ex-husband. We moved to Florida. I've lived in Miami for forever since 1997. So I was like 5 years in DC and then I came to Miami. And since I've been in Miami, I worked for a kind of a mid-sized law firm, which is now part of a very large national law firm. And then I went to a small boutique, which specialized in insurance law, which is what I did. And I made partner there. And I, did the whole thing of what you expect you would do in the progression of a typical law career. I had a partner who was very challenging in that job. And there was a point where I was like, I can't stay here and continue to work with this person. And I walked away with two contingency fee clients and started my own practice 12 years out of law school. So for the last, roughly 21 years of my career, I worked on my own with, I had staff part of the time. I didn't have staff part of the time. Frankly, as technology got better and better, the need for staff became less. But, throughout that time, from the time I left that job, there was a piece of me that was kind of like, do I dislike being a lawyer, or did this guy make it so bad that I don't want to do it anymore? And when I left and started my own thing, I thought, okay, like, this is going to be, it's me. I can make it the way I want it and, you know, live the kind of way I want. And I really made it into a practice that conformed with how I wanted to live my life. I walked to work every day. I had an office for a long time that was like literally 2 blocks from where I lived. I was able to, you know, I didn't take more cases than I could handle and still have a life. I got very involved in volunteer things. And this was a place where, you know, one of the things that happens with burnout, and it's funny because if you read the definition of burnout, there's a World Health Organization has defined burnout, and they specify it as being related to unmanaged chronic workplace stress. And they specify that it's only about workplace. But the truth is that we can burn ourselves out with things that aren't workplace work.
Yeah, true.
So, you know, I don't agree with that definition because I think it's a little bit short-sighted, especially for women who go from their busy professional job to their 80% of the tasks at home are their problem, right? Like, a lot of women are very, really like the one who does all the work at the house, right? My sister is too. And, you know, so when you look at that, like, how does that play out? And, you know, you can be burned out by having too much quote unquote work that isn't in your workplace, or that maybe it's a combination of all of the above. You know, in my case, I joined some things because I initially wanted to be able to market my business, make contacts. So I joined the Chamber of Commerce board, and then I was asked to be on a committee related to a development of a waterfront, like the whole waterfront area. They did a master plan where I lived. That turned into being elected to a village council, which was like 8 years of my life. I was on this village council, and it was very time consuming. And all of that volunteer stuff that I did was on top of working full time as a lawyer, you know? And so honestly, when I look at it, I realized like part of what burned me out was not law. It was law plus all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And I chose to do a lot of that other stuff because my relationship was getting kind of dicey and I didn't want to be around. So that was how I avoided. And then I would schedule like 3-day weekends on our boat. So my husband had my time while we were on the boat. But when I was home during the week, I basically wasn't around. And, you know, that's how I coped with home being stressful and, you know, work being stressful. Was I had this whole other world of work. And, you know, so there are different ways. And my point in telling you that is there are different ways you can burn yourself out. And I'm not sure I buy into the concept that it's only about what happens at work.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that can be one of the added stressors, but it's not
right.
The whole entire thing of burnout. Yeah. And usually you get burned out, not from your physical, right? It's the emotional weight
stress, it's carrying the ball. What happens with a lot of people is they become jaded and cynical and detached. They probably feel like they're doing more than other people. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, in a workplace environment, there's always that person who always seems to be doing all the work. And sometimes that person after a while is just like over it, right? And you know, that can lead to being resentful, and it can lead to feeling taken advantage of, and it can lead to feeling cynical about the job itself. I mean, I got to a point when I was really burned out where if a friend asked me about law school and said, oh, my kid wants to go to law school, or my sister or brother is considering law school or whatever, and I was asked, my response to them would be like, what are you talking about? Like, don't let them do it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's not a good profession. Don't encourage it. And, you know, I mean, I literally actively tried to talk people's kids out of going to law school who were excited about going to law school. And because I really felt that the profession, and I still, by the way, feel this way in some ways, I felt that the profession itself was, it takes a lot from you and it doesn't give back commensurate to what, you know, if you're all about money and you play that game, you can do that. I'm not money motivated. So for me, it was like, you know, I get motivated by seeing results and seeing something happen. And, you know, I like winning, but I also like seeing a finished product or whatever. But, you know, the problem with law is that, like, I was in litigation. A lawsuit could last like anywhere from 1 to 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And so it's dragging on and on. And sometimes, I mean, I had some cases where I had a hearing and we didn't have an answer from the court for like 5 months.
Wow.
So, and you can't, it, like, you're waiting. Now you're in a holding pattern. Like, you kind of got other stuff to do, but you're pretty much in a holding pattern waiting for the court to decide something. And, you know, that gets old. Like, when you don't see any, it doesn't come back to you. Like, by the time you see the result, it's so long ago, you're just kind of like, oh, okay. Like, the celebrating, the joy, the happiness of actually winning or completing something is really kind of dulled down by that time passage.
Wow.
And, you know, so I got very, very burned out in about 2000, I'd say 12 or 13. And that resulted in me realizing, okay, you know, I'm kind of feeling like crap here. I need to do something. And not long after I felt burned out, like really badly burned out, I had this scary hospital incident where I thought I had appendicitis. I was lying in bed for like, I couldn't go to sleep till like 2 in the morning one night. And the next day, the same thing happened. When I laid on my back, it hurt. When I stood up, I was okay.
Yeah.
And I couldn't figure out what was going on. I'm like, this is really weird. I, you know, like if I stand up and move around, I'm fine, but obviously I can't sleep like that. And when I'm lying on my back, as soon as I lie down on my back, it hurts. And it was brutal. And I thought I had appendicitis. The second night I went to the hospital, I was like, if my appendix bursts and I die of sepsis, like this is just my own stupidity. I've got to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
And I went to the hospital and they left me with this diagnosis of sorts where they said, you have these elevated liver enzymes and it looks like gallstones, but we don't really know for sure because we did an ultrasound and we can't see any gallstones. So maybe it is, maybe it isn't. You should probably go to a specialist. And I went home and I was like, gallstones are something you can address with nutrition. And so I decided to do that. And I changed how I was eating. I started exercising more. And the pain went away and it never came back.
What?
So I thought, okay, great. Like I've dealt with it, right? It's all cool. I'm good. And during that time frame, I went on a Beachbody program and then I signed up to be a coach with them, which was, you know, I did it for the discount, but what came from it was amazing, which was I got exposure for the first time to personal development. And there was this incredible group of women who were just wonderful here in Miami, who were all, you know, not just in Miami, our team was all over the country, but there was a really strong core group here in Miami. And, you know, so we had events and we won success club trips and we went to the summits and, you know, all that stuff. And it was a blast. And, you know, but in that first year, I lost 35 pounds. I got in the best shape I'd been in since high school, literally. And I was like, okay, this is awesome. And I'm feeling good. And so I had no idea what was going to happen when I got a UTI and I went to the doctor. And I said, you know, I need antibiotics. And he wanted to do blood testing because I hadn't had a checkup in a while. And he calls me when the blood test results came in, which is like what doctor does this, right? Scared the heck out of me because he's like, I want you to come and sit down with me and talk to me about your blood test results. So I'm like, right. And it turned out that the elevated results that they had that they thought were gallstones were twice as high as they had been a year before.
My God.
And so at that point, there were two things that were double normal, like double the highest end of the normal range. And there was a third one that was three times the top of the normal range. And, you know, my doctor didn't know what it was, but he's like, this is really out of whack. And I'm very concerned because, you know, a year ago, here's what it was when you went to the hospital. And so I saw a specialist, and that led to seeing another specialist, and that led to a diagnosis of this autoimmune liver disease called primary biliary cholangitis. And what it does is it attacks your microscopic bile ducts, which stop bile from moving through your liver. And bile is very caustic. So when the bile gets stuck, it damages the liver. And then you get a long term, if it's not treated, it starts as fibrosis, and then you get cirrhosis, and then you die or need a transplant. And I'm reading this stuff. Imagine, I mean, I'm looking up stuff about this disease, and I'm like, what? Like, cause it's saying things like 10-year lifespan and, you know, transplants and all this. I mean, it was terrifying. And so that was like the light that went off, that when I have to like make major, major changes, figure out what's going on. I talked to a friend who's a naturopath who helped me like look at my lifestyle, look at my like historical nutrition, changed the way I was eating, changed the way I was exercising, changed like a million things. And I also, you know, read a book by a doctor who ultimately I did her elimination diet and realized I had major gluten issues that I didn't know about. This was something that for your audience, if they don't know this, it's kind of important. One thing I learned is that you can have celiac disease without having symptoms. Yeah. And there are people who have the liver thing I have who have celiac and don't know they have celiac until they're tested for it. And it just doesn't cause the digestive problems that most people think are associated with that. So I'll never know if I have celiac, because first I went raw foods and then I cut out gluten, and it was months and months and months before I reintroduced gluten and I got really sick from it. But I can't have a test. The test is for an antibody. So it's negative because I don't eat gluten. But, you know, what my doctor told me is I could eat it for 2 months if I really wanted to. But since I know it makes me sick, why would I? Yeah. You know,
your body's already.
So, yeah. So basically all, you know, all that. Right. And after a while of this, like major change to my diet, major change to my lifestyle, you know, stress management, I went to a health coaching school to learn about functional medicine and how they treat autoimmunity through Institute for Integrative Nutrition in New York, which is a wonderful program. And I learned a lot from them. So I kind of came at it from a lot of different directions, from nutrition, from stress relief, from mindset, learning about personal development, like all this stuff. I kind of did a lot of things. And at the end of all of that, I had probably in about 2019, I realized I was like, I like my job again. I feel better than I did in my 30s. Not joking. Like my body and my mind and everything about me felt healthier, better, more comfortable, happier, et cetera, than I ever had like since law school.
Wow.
So, you know, and I attribute it to a lot of different things, but, you know, part of it was nutritional. Part of it was, you know, really following an anti-inflammatory diet, cutting way back on sugar, you know, drinking water.
Yeah.
Big deal. Lots of us don't drink enough water. And, you know, I was one of those people. Getting enough sleep, making sure that I was taking the devices away from my bedroom at night. You know, there's lots of things. What I realized was that, you know, I'd had this major change and it could help other people. And so I created a program for lawyers in like 2019. And then that morphed into a broader program, The Art of Bending Time. And the reason I call it that is because when I was in that process of becoming burned out, but I didn't know it yet, probably the first words out of my mouth half the time when somebody invited me to do something was, "I'm really sorry, but I don't have time." I was convinced I didn't have time for anything because I had constantly had all these things I had to do and I was always behind. And I felt like I needed time management help. And I had actually purchased a time management program because I thought that's what was wrong. And it wasn't, but it was what I thought was wrong. So, you know, when I was looking at who was I when I needed my help, so to speak, I was the chick buying the time management course who thought that she couldn't manage her time. Yeah. And that's why today I lead with time management, because it you know, a lot of people I think are in that place.
Yes. I really talk to a lot of attorneys who's always, or people in the just a professional setting, they're always just like, "I don't have time. I don't have time for a program. I don't have time for this." I'm just so, why don't you have time? Why is that? It's insane.
Yeah. And part of it is mindset. Part of it is culture. And this is something that unfortunately is a law firm culture thing in some law firms. And I can tell you right now, this, you know, sort of was the culture in the boutique firm I was part of. They were really funny because it was almost like gaslighting there. They would talk about, "Oh, we're all about lifestyle here, right? Like, we're all really cool and fun and we like to do things and whatever." And then everybody was at work till 8 o'clock at night and worked all day Saturday. Like, it was just, you know, it was like a workaholic environment, even though the people there didn't believe they were workaholics. Yeah. And in some firms, it was more of a, like in that firm, it truly was a workaholic environment. It was not a, like, the firm is making you do it. But there are other law firms where it's like, you have to have a certain number of billable hours. And if you don't have those hours, there's all this pressure, like you might lose your job or you're not going to get a good review or you won't get your bonus. And now a lot of them, the bonuses are literally built into insane levels of hours. So if you work so many hours, you get this bonus. And if you work this many more, you get this other bonus. And so, you know, and if you allow your life to be driven. And of course, what happens in these law firms is they kind of make you feel like, well, if you don't care about getting the bonus, you might not care about being partner one day, right? So everybody's got to strive for the bonus. And, you know, so that can be an institutional problem. And in some places it is, but it's also a workaholic, perfectionistic striver achiever problem that has a lot to do with the self-selection of the people who go to law school in the first place. Or med school, or become CPAs, or work at consulting firms, right? It's kind of that same, like that top student, go to the good grad school, get the great job. And part of that you sort of see in yourself is you're hardworking and you put work first.
Yes.
And you've done it your whole life. That's why you got straight A's and you weren't at the parties every time, right? I mean, really, like a lot of the students who are the ones who did that path are the same students who didn't have as balanced of a life, or the things they did in high school and in college were more toward trying to get the grades to get the resume. I mean, now it's all about getting the resume to get to the right college, right? Yeah. So you've got to have the right activities. Now you're in the sport and you're in the club and you're in the volunteer program, but, you know, are you doing it because you love it, or are you doing it because you think a college is going to accept you if you did those things?
Yeah.
So we start now really young. Like that's terrifying. Like, you know, we're starting at younger and younger, and that level of expectation is there.
Yeah.
And it's not about what lights you up and makes you happy. It's about having to get into Harvard or Yale or Stanford or whatever.
True. And then, yeah, when you're already burnt out as a kid, I'm just looking at like my nieces, nephews, I was even burnt out. And by the time you get to college, it's like you've done so much schooling, and then you go to college, it's more schooling. And then after college, you might want to do grad school or whatever. That's more schooling. So for most,
yeah,
your whole childhood's already in school.
I wanted nothing to do with school ever again when I got out of college. And And I was a headhunter in the tech industry in Boston for 2 years. And then I convinced myself that the job wasn't intellectual and challenging enough. And so I went to law school. And, you know, I mean, the funny part of it is that I was really, really, really good at that. And I loved it. And it's the kind of business that builds on time. And frankly, I probably would have been phenomenally successful in that field if I'd stayed there. Or, you know, I was also considering, instead of going to law school, like leaving and going into tech.
Oh.
In the 80s. And I didn't. Which I look at now and I'm like, damn, like, you know, if I had a time machine, right?
Yeah, but it's like your life path, you know?
You know, you do what you do and you get put in. I truly believe we really do kind of find, we get the experience we need somehow, right? And if we take that with us and we're open to opportunities, it seems like there is some kind of meaning toward these things.
Yeah. And it led you into the path of coaching others now, which is amazing, right? You enjoy
it. Yeah. Well, I mean, the irony is that as a headhunter, that's what I was doing. I was coaching others. In my first job ever after college, I was helping people find jobs. I was helping them know what they liked and what they should be looking at and how to present themselves. And, you know, in a way, I was a coach in a different way in that job. And a lot of the same things that kind of light me up and make me happy about being a coach are the things that lit me up and made me happy about being a headhunter.
Wow. But it's like a full circle.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
You back into that thing that you loved, but you had
to
your journey to get there. It's crazy.
Right.
Wow. That's amazing. So what is the art of bending time? What is that concept and how do you help other people with it?
Okay. So the concept has a few different, I call them different stages. Okay. The first stage I call busyness detox. And the busyness detox stage, seriously, that 10 hours a week, you could get that out of busyness detox without doing anything else. So that stage is about, first of all, getting really good clarity on what lights you up and makes you happy. And I'm not talking about job tasks. I'm not talking about like what your big purpose in the world is. I'm more talking about little things like, you know, playing with your child and seeing their smile lights you up, or having a cup of coffee and the smell of the coffee feels amazing. Like you just have this really good, like warm, fuzzy feeling about that moment, right? Or the sunshine on your skin, or creating something and seeing the finished product, or being in the flow state and working, you know, working on writing or art or whatever it is that gives you that moment where you're like, you lose track of time while you're doing a task and you really enjoy it. So if you find those things, and I do a guided meditation with people and some journaling on it so that we can identify what those things are and sort of break down what are the elements of those things so that you know what is it about that moment that you remembered? What is it about that experience that really was what lit you up? And it's usually something really little. And it's very individualized. For some people, it's physical movement. It's just being that joy of like running or jumping or being physically active. For some people, it's art or music or, you know, seeing something beautiful or interacting with other people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whatever that is for you, one of the really key things here is to try to make sure that you're proactively getting that into your days. And when you do that, it just fuels you. It gives you staying power, so to speak. If you're feeling bored, if you're feeling down, if you're feeling like it's just a drag and you've got to make it through the day, you're not energized and you're not focused. You're not going to be as focused and you're not going to get things done as fast, probably. And you may make more mistakes. And so things take longer. So you become scattered, you know, every squirrel has its hole, right? And you start chasing squirrels. So that's one thing. Another is the basics of healthy lifestyle. Being hydrated, getting enough sleep, moving your body in whatever way just to get your blood flowing and, you know, like not sitting all the time. One thing that I learned in my health coaching school, and I know I did not learn in my, you know, high school science was as far as I went on that, except astronomy. But I did not learn much about the lymph system. I learned the lymph system was basically this thing that exists.
Yeah.
You know, there's this thing called lymph nodes. What do we know about them? Virtually nothing, right? The lymph system takes out the garbage, essentially. The waste materials from your cells come out in a material, a liquid called lymph, which comes in and out of your cells. It takes the waste out of your cells, and then it moves, and it does actually have vessels, and like, we didn't even learn about that, right? That it has vessels and all this stuff, and it goes through the lymph nodes, it gets cleaned or something, it goes through these vessels, and eventually it ends up going out of your body, or, you know, so that it's removed as waste. It goes into your kidneys, I believe. I could be wrong about that. But long story short, the lymph system doesn't have a pump. So your heart is the pump for your blood. What moves your lymph? Your muscles do. So if you sit in your chair all day, if you get out of bed where you've been lying all night, you take a shower, you sit in your car, you sit in a chair all day at work, you come home in your car, you sit on the couch, and then you go to bed, you literally aren't moving your body around. And if you're not moving your body around, your lymph system isn't getting, the pump isn't working. And your system is literally kind of steeping in its own waste until you move enough that you make that work. It works better. You're a well-oiled machine when you exercise.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, most of us don't know this, right?
We don't.
And, you know, we get rid of a lot of toxins through our sweat, and we get rid of a lot of, believe it or not, through our breath. A very high percentage of toxins are removed as you exhale. In your breath. So all of that, like breathing heavily and et cetera, it's all good. It's great for you. And it helps you, you know, when you have toxins building up in your system, guess what happens? You get brain fog. You get foggy. You're not focused. That whole thing can be take, like you can get rid of that just by how you live your life, literally. And, you know, the next thing is learning how to deal with what I call your internal time sucks. So if you have, let's say you feel stressed and uncomfortable about something you have to do at work, and instead of doing it, you go into your mailbox and you start going through your junky emails, right? The stuff that's just a waste of your time. And you spend an hour and a half reading junk emails and deleting them. And not getting any real work done because you're just, you know, kind of jerking around, not avoiding what you're supposed to be doing that matters. You know, that again, like you could be getting productive work done in that time. And there are ways you could deal with those junk emails. You know, I mean, if you had to, you could get an assistant to deal with that. Or if you have an assistant where you work, that could be part of their job description is go through my emails before I do and get rid of the junk. Unsubscribe from stuff for me, you know, do that so that I'm spending my time doing the work that is my lane and moves me forward in the things I need to do.
That's good.
So, you know, and part of that is things like, you know, the internal time sucks. Being disorganized to the point that you're always losing things. Like, you know, I have family members who are always looking for their keys. And it's a joke among my family, but it's really not that funny. Because if you spend 10 minutes every morning running around like harried at the last minute because you can't find your keys and you need to get someplace, And you're already like, you're barely on time when you leave the house, but then you don't have your keys, right? Like that's a thing. And it happens to a lot of people. You know, clothing, I mean, anything like being organized, it helps. Then we get into the higher level stuff. I call this just getting strong. It's like a way to strengthen those things. One of the things I go into is a higher level of what I'm going to call time suck ninja moves, where you're dealing with other people's like things that aren't in your control directly. It's not, you're not causing it, but it's coming from outside of you. It might be noise. It might be the sun in your eyes in the afternoon that glares and causes you not to be able to work at your computer right. Like, and you need to deal with that somehow. In my case, in a law firm I worked in DC, it was that my office was right across the street from, or across the hall from a stairway that came down that everybody went down those stairs and walked past my door to go to the kitchen. Like 2/3 of the law firm was upstairs and everybody walked past my door and everybody said hi. And we were expected to have our doors open. And so I'm really distractible, and it was really destroying my ability to get work done. So I put my computer, at this point it was desktop, you know, I put my computer on the credenza behind my desk. So when I was working at my computer, my back was to the door.
Oh, wow.
The door was open, but they could see my computer screen and they could see I was working on my computer. And then if they interrupted me, it was because they needed me. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't just like, hey, how you doing? And then stopping and talking. And the next thing I know, it's half an hour later, you know? So then we have habits. We create habits and create morning and evening routines that help reinforce getting the things done that we want to get done, reinforce the healthy habits we want to have and like become our lifestyle. And then we have mindset, where we work on, you know, having a more positive like perspective, being an optimist, visualizing what you want and considering, you know, what's going to happen, what can I do next, like having a plan, right? But in a positive way. And, you know, having a growth mindset so that you're not, and I think, again, for a lot of especially accomplished professionals, it's surprising how many have just always, they've succeeded easily for a lot of their lives. So when they get to a point where things get hard or they fail, they get a bad review at work, they don't get the sale, whatever that thing is for them, a lot of people quit, or they ruminate about it for days. And it affects their productivity because they're focused more on the feeling of failure or the quit. You know what I mean? Like for some people, that's really, it's a big, big, big issue as far as time. Learning to, and you said you've done Tony Robbins stuff, so you know about changing state.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, that's not something a lot of people know about. A lot of people they get in that bad state and they're stuck there for the rest of the day. Yeah. And, you know, the ability to turn it on a dime and go, okay, I've acknowledged that I'm mad about this and I don't like it. What can I control right now? And getting yourself back on track, again, can save you, I mean, hours. If you're that person who gets taken off the rails when something goes wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. But how do you bring awareness to, you know, high achievers or people who've been in used to this environment? How do you bring that awareness to them? Because they're just so caught up in their own perception about life and their reality. And
They are, and they usually are in some kind of level of crisis that has nothing to do with their mindset. Mm-hmm. At least they don't think it does.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, there's a lot of times where we have things that we perceive a certain thing is what the problem is. But there's a lot of ways to solve that problem. And if we're not aware of it, we don't know to look at it, right? And that kind of thing, like ruminating on what went wrong, is a big one.
Yeah.
It's such a big one. People who, you know, take something personally that happened with somebody at work and they can't get rid of that feeling. I mean, I'll tell you, honestly, I had not done this work before I left that law firm where I was a partner. And I walked away from equity because I couldn't stand working with that person and how he made me feel and the things that he did. And I would go home and I'd bring it home and my husband and I would get in fights over it because he'd tell me I was weak and I needed to stand up to the guy and all this stuff. And I was like, I mean, that wasn't the solution either. But the fact was I did need to deal with how I dealt with it in me. And if it were happening today, it would be a completely different situation.
Yeah.
Because I don't react to the world the same way. And, you know, that is something you can learn, but you're not going to learn it if you don't know about it. So that is part of what I bring into my program, because I found a lot of accomplished professionals, especially lawyers, have a fixed mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And have a tendency to beat themselves up when something happens that, you know, it didn't work out.
Yeah.
So they don't see it as a challenge. They see it as a failure, and they see themselves as a failure when they don't get their way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Completely.
So, you know, and that's it, absolutely contradicts what you need to do if you want to be happy. You know, you can be a bully and you can be angry and isolated and in some circumstances be successful on some level, but you can't, most people aren't going to be happy unless they're a sociopath, right?
Yeah.
They're not going to be happy and be all those things. And, you know, so that's something that, you know, is very helpful to a lot of people, is even just understanding about that. And understanding that, you know, let's take a step back and let's look at all the facts, not just this thing that you're focused on that you're convinced you're right about, but what about the whole bigger picture and yeah. What's going on there and what can you influence? Maybe you didn't get this, but there's a good, you know, I found there's almost always the silver lining if you look for it.
For sure. There is in every situation. There really is.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, not everybody sees the world that way. So those are the two like foundational layers. And then the top level is identifying. I have people identify three, like I call them big, hairy goals, like 3 to 5 year goals, big, you know, they're big, big goals. You want to make partner, you want to start your own business. You want to, you know, start investing in buying small businesses or real estate or, you know, whatever, or things related to your personal life. Maybe you want to start having kids. Maybe you want to, you know, retire when you're 40 and travel the world, whatever that is. We work on analyzing it first with what I call a SWOT analysis, because the ninja has to have their sword. So the analysis is about looking at your existing strengths and weaknesses related to a goal. What do you have and what do you need, basically? And then what are the opportunities and risks that that goal brings with it? Are you going to double your income? Are you going to be able to have a much better lifestyle or have more time with your kids? Or, you know, there's always going to be benefits and trade-offs with whatever goal you choose. And then I go to the D, which is for desire. And in the desire part, I basically say to people very quickly, 1 to 10, how much do you want it? After they've done that whole analysis. And a lot of times, you know, a lot of times they really want it. It's their bigger goals. But I've had a lot of people turn around and it's like, oh, I don't know, maybe a 6. It's like, why is that one of your bigger goals? Like, this is your 3 big hairy goals for your life. And it's only a 6. How come? Like, what is it? Why do you really want this? And what we usually find out is that it isn't their goal.
Yeah.
It's maybe it's that it's the expected path of their career, but they don't really care about it, or they don't really want it. Maybe it's something that their family always expected of them. Maybe it's something that they picked up on when they were 12 years old and they've always thought it's what they wanted, but now they're 40 and they've got a family and a whole different life. And they're like, now that I look at this from my current perspective with all of these things in play, yeah, why do I really want that? Yeah. You know, it doesn't matter to me anymore. Well, for some people that frees them from a lot of burden that they've been carrying around. Again, saving them time and usually money and like stresses in their relationships and everything else. And then we take however many goals we have left at that point, it's not always all of them. We build a team around it. And part of that is breaking down the barriers between this whole concept of work-life balance, which I really feel like is limiting to people and can be destructive. Instead of considering work-life balance, consider who you know in your whole life. Who are the people, like, for instance, let's say as an example, you want to become an artist on a whatever level that is for you. You're really into painting. You're looking for places where you can do that, where maybe you don't have to spend like $1,000 to have a course and materials and whatever it is, you're looking for ways to do that, you know, but you don't know anything about it, where you live, you haven't taken painting classes since fifth grade, whatever that is. And you go to work and you talk to the people you work with and say, hey, you know what? I'm really interested. I want to learn how to, you know, I used to paint. I really liked it. I want to do this. Does anybody know somebody who paints who might be able to give me some advice about how to go about that? Now you've got a friend at work who maybe introduces you to their aunt or to their friend or to their, you know, their significant other, or maybe they do it themselves. And now you have a connection that's deeper than the transactional, we work on the same team and we, you know, we're part of a work group. You're likely to build friendships out of that. You're broadening your network and it's like you're creating a web that's expanding your universe in a way through making that contact that you might not have done otherwise if you had this work-life balance mindset where you went into work and said, I'm not going to talk to anybody about my personal stuff at work, or I'm not going to talk to anybody in my personal life about my work.
Yeah. That's true. That's good. I love that. I love how you can help combine that for people.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's good for team. It's great for team building. It's great for creating retention if you're a leader in a team in an organization. Because when your team are friends and they know each other on a level that's deeper than that transactional, we're just here to punch the clock and work together 8 to 10 hours a day. You've got a more stable relationship there. You've got people who come to work because they like the people and they like the relationships. And it's not just about sitting there at your computer with your, you know, like with your headphones on, not talking to anybody. So, you know, it's old school in a way. I think we've lost some things about, you know, now the big concern in companies is burnout.
Yeah.
Lack of retention, failure to be able to recruit new people because it's hard to bring in new people. Well, if you're an awesome place to work and your people have friends that need jobs, guess what? It's not hard to recruit people.
Yeah.
It's hard to recruit people because they don't like working there.
That's so
right. I mean, if your people love the mission, love the company, love the people in the company, they're going to tell their friend about it if you need somebody.
Yeah. It's true.
So, you know, from a leadership perspective, working with a team, this stuff's great because it helps solidify that team and helps people have more. But it also, like, let's say your people at work talk to the people outside of work, you know, somebody, let's say you sell something in your business And in their home life, your people are excited about your company's mission, what you're selling, what you're doing. And they tell people, they tell their friends at the at their sailing club or at their kids' school or whatever. It drives sales. It drives awareness. They're not, you know, how many people though will, they'll just go like to the parent thing at school and all they talk about is the kid.
That's true. That's what I do. Well, no, when I'm around other people, it's about my kid, but also, you know, what I do.
But when you connect on a more personal level where you get to know the people and what they do and what they're about, like the other moms or the dads, whoever it is, you know, that you're meeting, you can build relationships which expand your reach, and that makes it possible to shortcut when you want to learn something. If you find that person, like the, back to the painting example, you know, you might have spent a bunch of time and money going to some place because you heard about it, but maybe there's a really great artist collective. And that person says to you, hey, you know, yeah, you could take those classes at the local college, but there's this artist collective. And for a really reasonable fee, we do these workshops every week.
Mm.
And you didn't know about it.
Yeah.
You know, like it's that kind of thing. So, you know, all of these things sort of work together. And I like to use this little toy. So I have my dog toy here. And what this does is, let's say you want to, here's where you are today.
Mm-hmm.
You're the person who wants to learn to paint, hasn't painted since fifth grade, doesn't know where to go, doesn't know what to do or how to do it. And you could go the long way around, right? You could, you know, look up places, you could take the college class, you whatever. Or you could talk to somebody's aunt who says, go to the collective. And all of a sudden you're like doing this and you're taking what should have been this path and you're making it into this path. And you can do that in lots of different ways. So that's where the bending time part comes in. That's kind of, that was the idea I had when I thought about that. But it's really about taking all of these inputs, your health, your mindset, the way that you interact with your world, so to speak, your environment, so that you have the most ability to be focused, be in the moment, be in the zone, get stuff done, and then you're going to get 10 times more stuff done.
Yeah.
And then have these, you know, a better way to plan how you're going to get your big goals done so that you shortcut and you find the community or you find the club or you find the, you know, the path of least resistance that somebody else maybe knows more about it than you.
Yeah. I love that. I love that so much. That's amazing. See, like your journey led you into finding your purpose of teaching people the art of bending time, which is.
Yeah. I mean, I always knew that I loved teaching and it's been, you know, like I said, there's kind of this through line with coaching and, you know, that like teaching people thing has been in me my whole life. But I never would have thought it was going to be about time or about how to live a happy life. You know, that's different. And I love it.
I can tell, like you're glowing. You're like so happy. You're smiling when you talk about it. Like you just glow up and that's exactly what life should be or how everybody should be living when they are passionate about what they do and what they bring into the world, you know, they should have that.
Exactly. So sparks that light you up, like that to me, that is the big deal.
Yes, exactly.
If you can find that and be driven, be guided by that, find a way to proactively get that.
Yeah.
The rest of it will find its way.
Amazing. Thank you so much for today and giving us all your amazing knowledge and expertise. So where can people find you more or want to work with you?
Okay, so they can find me on my website, which is just, you know, https://michellenemeyer.com. And you'll, I think you have that, right?
Yes, I will put it
okay.
Early
and
below, but sometimes when people hear it on the podcast, I just like to.
All right, so there's the website. Now, I gave you a link mm-hmm. And the link is to get, and this is just for podcast subscribers and people who I've directed to this link. It goes to a free community that has tools in it. And I mentioned to you that I do a guided meditation and journaling session for people with about clarity and about the sword analysis. And the tools for those things are in that community. So if your audience wants access to download the, you know, the guided meditation or the journal prompts or any of that, it's all there. And to get to that, you have a link, or their other option, if they're not driving their car, is text the word clarity to 33777. So clarity to 33777, and that'll literally put you right into an opt-in page that'll give you the opportunity to sign up for that community.
Oh, amazing. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay.
So, and if I, you know, when I do webinars and things like that, anything that's free content, it's, you know, people will know about it.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And I can't wait for the listeners to hear this episode. Thank you for being here.
Well, it's great. Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here, Kathy.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for spending this time with me on Ignite Your Power with Kathy Mao podcast. If today's episode resonated with you, take a deep breath and know this, you're exactly where you're meant to be. If you're feeling called to go deeper, I'd love to support you. You can work with me one-on-one or book a numerology guidance card reading with me. All are in the show links below. And if this episode supported you in any way, please share with someone who needs it, leave a review, or take a screenshot and tag me on social media. Your support helps this message reach more souls who are ready to step into their power. Until next time, keep choosing yourself, keep trusting your journey, and keep living your bliss-soft life. I'll see you in the next episode. Bye!